Many of the commuter trains are still operating on limited service. Some are not operating at all. The future of these lines is in jeopardy. With me to discuss the commuter lines and the state of public transportation and automobile traffic flow and pedestrians in Philadelphia is Dr. Vukan Vucic, one of the world's leading experts in urban transportation. Dr. Vucic is a professor of civil and urban engineering transportation at the University of Pennsylvania. He co-authored the transportation report for the Philadelphia Past, Present, and Future Project. He's also the author of a book called Public Transportation Systems and Technology. And in 1982, he became the first recipient of the Dr. Friedrich Lehner Medal in Germany, given to persons who have dedicated a life work to urban public transportation and excelled in that effort. Dr. Vucic was born and grew up in Yugoslavia, and I want to welcome you to Fresh Air. And I want to mention to our listeners that if there's time, towards the end of our discussion, we'll be opening up the telephones for your questions and comments about transportation in Philadelphia. Well, welcome again to Fresh Air. The first week in January, when the trains were cut back, half the lines were in operating, the ones that did were on real skeletal service, the city and SEPTA seemed to be saying, well, since there's not calamity in the streets, maybe people don't really need those commuter lines. Maybe we can cut them back, or maybe even if they collapsed, it wouldn't make much of a difference in that city. Do you agree with that analysis? Do you think that that is an accurate measure of the need for commuter rails?
No, I don't. I think that's a rather naive view. It's similar to like when a snowstorm comes and there is a disruption of general normal life and so on, but we survive somehow, and then people say, well, we've survived it. Well, sure, we survived, but how? Now, this specific situation that occurred here a couple of weeks ago and is still partly occurring is rather complex and very interesting. First of all, there were tremendous preparations for this interruption of regional or commuter rail services. And in some ways, that was very good. We introduced some measures in traffic engineering, and we changed some driving habits and so on, which have been very useful. Interestingly, we noticed that automobile traffic has actually decreased with this situation because many people were skeptical about the situation. They decided to use other transit modes, to carpool, to vanpool, to come at different times and so on. So first of all, we prepared the situation very well and improved conditions. And we have learned that if we do a better job in regulating traffic and getting more people to use transit, as we have shifted them now under these situations, we could have much better traffic conditions. And second is that there are many problems with this stoppage or slowdown that are not visible. There are many hidden inconveniences. There are many people who are traveling half an hour, 1 hour longer. And this is fine for a week or two. People put up with it. But in the long run, they will start looking for another job, another residence, or move out of the region.
Does Philadelphia need a commuter rail system?
Oh, definitely, yes. Philadelphia has actually the most complete network of regional rail of any U.S. city. And to produce anything similar to it today would cost billions and billions of dollars. We have actually underutilized that system greatly. And what we keep hearing, I don't know, 40,000 people per day, that's a great mistake, really. First of all, we had about 130,000 riders on this system. They're not the same people. You cannot take that number and divide by two and say that was 65,000 people because there are different people on different days. Our estimates are that approximately 500,000 people are using this system from time to time, some of them daily, some of them once a month. But for most people who are close to the stations, it's a great asset.
So do you think it's a good commuter system? There's many lines. So do they function well?
No, I cannot say that, especially at this time. They certainly don't. It's a changeover. But the point is that the system was operated by managements which were not only disinterested in modernizing, improving service. Actually, they were very anxious to get rid of those services. And you never have good service when it's operated by somebody who doesn't want it. So what we have had has been the system for the last 20 years at least, which got new cars but nothing else new. And the operating practices, labor practices, are 50, 60, 80 years old. There has been no promotion, no marketing. There has been no careful look in what can be done until really a year or two ago when we faced this situation that something has to be done because financially it was getting worse and raising more and more fares just doesn't go because you lose more and more passengers and you're paying by increased congestion and inconvenience and you're defeating the purpose of public transportation. So now we're catching up really with the solutions that should have taken place over the last decades.
So you think the people running the trains have looked at the trains as a burden and not as an asset?
That is right. I mean, many Conrail officials for many years said that they would prefer not to have that system.
You've made a list of fallacies that you think the city or SEPTA has about ridership on the commuter trains. Let's look at some of these things that you label as fallacies.
Yes.
You say it's a fallacy that ridership is decreasing.
Yes. If we look carefully at the numbers, there was one crisis in the late 50s, around 1960, and the city and suburban counties got together and said, we need this system. They started buying the Silver Liners cars and so on and improved schedules. That was the last major improvement, really, of service. From 1960 to late 70s, we had about 30% increase in ridership. Only in the last couple of years, we lost riders because in 1 year, our fares nearly doubled. The service was cut. And, of course, if the fare goes up and service is cut and becomes unreliable in many places, it's quite logical that we lost some passengers in the last years. But the potential of this system in serving not only trips to work and back in center city, not only a limited group of people, the potential is very great, but the system has to be connected much more carefully with buses and trolleys and subways. There has to be much better information. There has to be some promotion. There have to be some marketing devices and many other things.
You say that it's a fallacy that buses and carpools could serve as an alternative to commuter rails.
Yes, and every study undertaken on that topic has shown that very clearly, that we cannot come close to providing similar service by any other mode. On most lines, a bus would take probably two or three times the time, plus it's less comfortable. People just would not take the bus, or I should say many of them would not take the bus because it's not a real alternative at all. The automobile is not an alternative either because the inconvenience of driving, especially in the peak hours when these trains carry most people, is very great. It's the congested roads. It's very expensive parking downtown. It's some people who don't drive and some people who would have to buy another car. Now, when you include that cost, then, of course, even the high fares of regional rail are cheaper than the alternative of buying another car. And that's not even discussing the negative impact on the city, on the congestion, on air pollution, or provision of some 12,000 parking spaces. If we compute that, how many buildings it would have to occupy, we would see that we would nearly double the downtown by parking garages. That certainly doesn't help the city to look like an attractive city, an efficient city.
How do you think the system that we have could best be modernized?
There are many ways, from some very simple ones to some that would require substantial investments and take a few years. I think that we have bottomed out about 2-3 years ago. Until then, our public transportation was going down the hill. SEPTA services have significantly improved. Now, the commuter regional rail is bottoming out now, I think. But there are many devices, starting from many new types of fares. We have had several innovations recently. There is still more to go. Marketing, much better information. We still have tremendous deficiencies. Let me give you an example. Railroad stations are one of the primary locations in any city where you get potential transit riders. We have one of the busiest stations in the country here, where people come from New York, Washington, and many other places. They come to that station and they have to make a great effort to get to one corner of the station to see a map of the city and transit lines. And then they see the sign where the station is, and that's closed off now. They have to go in the street and find somebody who will tell them where to go in the subway. Now, that's incredible, and that has to be improved. That's just one drastic example about poor information. Another one is we are operating our buses like nearly horse-drawn omnibuses, stopping at every corner. That's convenient for people not to walk, but once you get on the bus, it never gets anywhere. It's so slow that most people who have any other choice tend to avoid the bus service and trolley service. We can speed that up. Then the traffic conditions on the streets, and this is what happened a few days ago. Some traffic engineering measures, some regulations, and police enforcement has taken place. And at once we saw that the buses are moving faster. That's very logical. It has been used in many cities, but we have been very slow in introducing any preferential treatments, any speeding up of transit vehicles. Of course, the question comes, well, that's all nice for the city, but how about suburbs? Well, there are many things in the suburbs also that could be introduced. One is that instead of running bus lines along major highways or streets, they intersect each other, but they all run every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. So if you want to change from one bus to trolley or trolley to commuter line, you often have to wait for 27 minutes, and you don't know where you're waiting, you don't know the schedule, and so on. There have been a number of cities now that have introduced the system, and we at the University of Pennsylvania have studied this system also and developed the planning tools for it, that transit lines should be focused on certain points in suburbs, like, for example, Derby and downtown Chester and Ardmore and Media and so on. And then there would be 3 or 4 or 8 or 10 transit lines coming at the same time. The vehicles come at the same time. People can transfer from one vehicle to another. And 4 minutes later, they are on their way to any other line. And at once, instead of random service, which cannot be used conveniently, we have a network of transit services. So that's another one. And then, of course, with regional rail, I keep calling it regional because I think commuter name is really very limiting, and it's not only commuter. If you take any train on Saturday, you will see a completely different public than the typical commuter who is going in peak hours and so on. Regional lines would also have a great number of innovations that could be done, and we should be shooting for something like 200,000 daily riders rather than about 90,000 or 100,000 that we have fallen down to now. I think with promotion we could reasonably double the present ridership.
I want to get back to some of the suggestions that you've just made. Let me reintroduce you. My guest is Dr. Vukan Vucic. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, an internationally known transportation expert. And we're talking about transportation in the Delaware Valley, and we hope to open up the phones a little bit later. Let's get back to the regional rail, as you put it, and look again at the dispute now between SEPTA, who now has authority of the regional rails, and the labor unions. The union's attitude seems to be that if their wages get cut back, it won't be fair. You can't expect the people to accept a cut in wages, and that it won't be a fair wage. SEPTA's attitude seems to be that the system will be bankrupted if they have to continue paying the wages that they are. What do you think of the conflict? Do you have any opinions?
Yes. Well, there is a... It's not only SEPTA's opinion, really. It is a fact that it is not possible at this day and age to operate trains with three men on a single car train or five men, six men crews on a five-car train or six-car train. It's just... Economically, it cannot be justified, and there's just not enough finances for that. There are some opinions it cannot be done with fewer people. There is safety. There are signals. There are passengers and so on. Let me tell you, based on a great number of cities, I know very, very well how they operate, it can be done with fewer people. It cannot be done with one man or two men, or with five-car train, but it can be done with fewer people than is presently the case. It is a serious problem that some people will get either lower wages or some of them will stay without work. But I think the thrust of the union should be not to fight to retain jobs that are obsolete and economically unsupportable. There's just no way. If they would insist and retain that, the system would collapse. We would lose as riders, and they would lose their jobs. They would lose the most, really. But what they should be doing is to insist on higher frequency of trains with smaller crews. We should increase the jobs that are productive, that will generate more passengers. And thereby there would be gain, and these jobs would be permanent rather than a remnant from 1920, which really cannot be supported.
When SEPTA refers to outmoded labor practices, is that primarily what they're referring to, the number of men per train?
Yes, it is the number of men per train and some of the computations of wages. You see, on per-hour basis, many drivers and conductors don't get excessive rates, but they do get payments of layover time and a limit of, I don't know, 150 miles and many rules that are really completely obsolete.
It seems to me the people in the union are really in a bind because although they wouldn't want to price themselves out of existence, it's getting more and more difficult for working people to make a living or to hold a job in these times of high unemployment and times where many corporations are trying to cut back on wages. So you would suggest that they try to create more jobs through more trains?
That is right. I think they should look how to expand the service and improve it. And really, if you look at it in perspective, the interests of the labor unions and the management, in many ways, they are identical. They both testify for better support, permanent financing, and so on. And colliding and striking and so on would just defeat the purpose. It would just chase people away.
I think a big factor in deciding whether someone will use the trains or not, or the buses or trolleys, is how safe they feel, both when they're riding but also while they're waiting for it. And I think of a place like Suburban Station, which after working hours is really deserted. And depending which entrance you walk into, you're faced with long, empty corridors, which... You would just think would be perfect for potential attackers to be hiding out in. Do you think that our system makes sense for safety the way it is now?
There are some locations where the design did not foresee security problems and so on. There are some corners. But in general, even Suburban Station is so large and open that even late at night there is always some official and police, and I don't think the main part of the station is hazardous at all. The big difference in security also is how the stations are maintained and controlled, and this is the big difference. 2-3 years ago, we had most of our subway stations scribbled in horrible shape, and that invites vandalism and crime. And SEPTA has done a remarkable job in turning things around. And now the next task for SEPTA is to get people who have abandoned its services, and for good reasons 2-3 years ago when they were frightening, to get them to try to use them again, because many people cannot, they are so positively surprised, they cannot recognize the same subway stations, how clean they are, how trains are clean, and so on. And we are introducing closed-circuit TV and so on, and it can be done. We have modern rapid transit systems in San Francisco, Washington, and so on, which have excellent safety and security records, and we are getting there also.
People who have run the train system in the past have, as you said, seen it as more of a burden than an asset, and in fact, Conrail just handed it over to SEPTA. Do you think SEPTA will have that same defeatist thinking?
No, for some time SEPTA did have a defeatist thinking, but I detect a very substantial change in attitudes, and I think every citizen here has noticed some innovations from Transpass and some other innovations in fares and better schedules, and then letter from the general manager, and even this takeover. And this is not a small task to take over the whole system, and I think it has been prepared with great care.
Let me reintroduce you. Dr. Vukan Vucic is my guest, and he's an expert on urban transportation. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and he co-authored the Task Force Report on Transportation for the Philadelphia Past, Present, and Future Project. We're talking about public transportation as well as automobile traffic. We'll be talking about pedestrians soon in the Delaware Valley. We'll be opening up the phones a little later for your questions and comments. Let's look at traffic. One of the things I have found really frustrating since moving to Philadelphia is that aside from the parkway, nearly every street is in a straight line. There's no shortcuts that you can take. There's no diagonals to get anywhere aside from the parkway. And aside from Walnut and Chestnut Streets, the lights are on time. So you're apt to stop at every or every other corner at a red light. So what would, under normal circumstances without traffic, be a 5-minute trip develops into maybe a 15-minute trip because of all the lights you're stopping at. What do you think the story is with that? Is that one of the problems you see too?
To some extent, traffic signals can be improved. Many of them are very obsolete or not carefully controlled. But I should mention this. When you have a one-way street, you can and you should coordinate signals so that cars travel smoothly, as is usually the case on Chestnut and Walnut. But when you have a two-way street, it is often physically impossible to coordinate all signals ideally for both directions because of speed and time and so on. If you synchronize for westbound traffic, the eastbound traffic will be hitting many red lights. So we have to make some compromises, or in the morning for the peak direction, we synchronize them. And then if you go opposite peak, you will have slow travel, yes.
But there are many one-way streets, Lombard, South Street, Pine, Spruce, that don't seem to be synchronized very well at all.
Absolutely, yes. Now, the main problem of traffic in Philadelphia really is some of the obsolete, inadequate traffic engineering. I think we have our pavement markings that are just very carelessly splashed on the ground instead of designed by engineers and carefully painted. Or sometimes we have 20-foot wide roadway and one vehicle comes at a time. If we draw a line, paint a line in the middle, we get two vehicles at a time. We double the capacity. It's as simple as that. Whatever you do then with traffic engineering, you need enforcement. And enforcement is another problem that we have in Philadelphia, that police, until very recently, has done nothing to really enforce many of the basic rules and regulations. They've sometimes handled the signals, and even that they need more training to do. But they have tolerated if somebody's buying a pretzel and there are 20 cars behind him on a green light. They've tolerated anything, U-turns, any kind of behavior. And this is disastrous. And some people say, well, that's fine, you don't feel the police and you are free to do whatever you want. Well, in the long run, you're not free. If everybody can do anything he wants, the public suffers and this city becomes chaotic. And in the long run, people say, I don't like to go in that city because it's terrible, it's congested and you're frustrated. It could be done better, but nobody's doing anything about it. And again in the past days when police moved in at least a little bit, the results have been remarkable. And I think we should keep that up now and increase it.
Oh, are you ever in touch with the people who make decisions about that? And who does make the decisions about when the lights are going to be timed or not, or if there'll be a white line drawn down to create two lanes in a highway, that in a street that people are driving up the middle?
Yes, I have been in touch with many people who make decisions, yes. And it's sometimes surprising how many explanations or excuses are found of not doing proper things, either excessive caving in to some property owner or just lack of coordination between different departments or even physical failure. For example, our pavement markings, they are carelessly done, and they are such that they don't last, and so on. I think they are inexcusable, and I have not found good excuses for that.
People who drive into Sedner City have noticed that most of the parking meters have been changed, and it's now, was it?
It's 25 cents
for about
per
20 minutes.
Yeah. 75 cents an hour, yes.
And there are two-hour parking limits, which is frustrating if you're coming in, say, on a Friday or Saturday night, you want to see a movie, or maybe even see a movie and have dinner, and you're not allowed to park for as long as the movie lasts. Say the movie's 2 hours and 10 minutes.
There are some improvements that could be done there, and in some areas there are three-hour meters or four-hour meters. Unfortunately, the meters take only quarters, which is an inconvenience, or you sometimes don't fine on the meter when it is enforced. You know, after six, can you park or not? And I think that should be on every meter. That was a bad mistake. But in general, the increase of those rates has been very proper. People are shocked. How come at once you go from 20 cents or 25 cents to 75? The answer is that the 20 cents parking is the price from 1954 or something like that. When you compare any other price, it has gone up substantially. We have just failed to keep up with times. There are two basic reasons for higher parking rates. One is some revenue should be collected because the city needs revenue for cleaning and policing and everything else. And second is that one of the basic ideas of parking meters at all is that they secure turnover and use of the same space by more vehicles. Streets should not be for all-day parking. There is no way that a large city like Philadelphia should have people parking the whole day for a nominal fee, like a dollar or something like this. Parking on street should be for short term, for business people coming to the post office, dropping off, visiting a doctor for half an hour, and so on. But it should not be a storage on the streets. Streets are more for traveling traffic rather than for stationary traffic.
Why should we decrease that? Why should someone who's driving have to pay so much just to be able to park their car in the city, whether it's at a lot or at a parking meter? And now there are no alternatives. You have to spend a lot of money when you drive into town.
We have to understand one thing, that the automobile is an excellent gadget, very convenient, and it's indispensable for many trips. But in large cities or even in medium-sized cities, if hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people drive them, they have very low capacity and congestion occurs and many other problems occur, like noise and pollution and so on. Cars are not convenient to be used in great numbers in high-density cities. That's why we have public transportation. That's why we walk many times more conveniently than by car. And that's why more and more cities have the policy of discouraging use of cars in their central area. And now people would like to have free travel, not to pay anything. But on the other hand, that just does not go with a friendly city. And if everybody else would do it, the same people would say, now, just a minute, we don't want all these cars in the city. See, everybody for himself would like to drive free, But he would also like that his street is not congested. Well, the two things don't go together. And the answer is that we should have a policy of discouraging the automobile from the city and keeping it for more suburban travel, off-peak travel, business travel in the city for short trips, and so on.
Philadelphia, like many cities, is trying to boost the use of Center City. It wants more people to come in and go to the theater and use the movie theaters and shop and use the restaurants because it's good for a city when people are in it and supporting it. Yet at the same time, it's very hard to drive into it now because it costs so much. The commuter trains are operating on such a limited schedule. You can't really rely on that either. And it just seems to me, as someone who goes into Center City, that it's becoming very hard to do that. And I feel that the city's discouraging us from getting in. What do you think?
No, I think, as I mentioned, that already today using transit is much easier and better than a couple of years ago. With trains, I will agree that they are at the low point now and they are extremely inconvenient. They're not back on regular schedule. But what I'm arguing is that if we really would fully utilize the trains into the city, this city would be probably the second, not just about the second most accessible city in the country after New York. And our quality of transit now is much better than New York. So that we do have that basic condition. And by the way, what's going on Market East in connection with the tunnel and some new buildings, people will be very positively surprised in a few years what's coming out of there. It'll be a beautiful part of the city.
I want to ask you about the commuter tunnel, but let me open up the phones first and invite our listeners to call. Dr. Vukan Vucic is my guest. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, an internationally known authority on urban transportation systems. We're discussing public transportation, automobile flow. We'll be talking about pedestrian traffic in Philadelphia. And if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to discuss with him, you can call us now at 923-2774. We're at area code 215. The number again is 923-2774. Do you think that the commuter tunnel will be beneficial to Philadelphians, or do you think the project is a boondoggle?
It has been extremely popular to criticize that project for a number of years. I completely understood the reasons that when everything was falling apart, that we were putting tremendous investment in that tunnel, it didn't seem to make sense. However, I've never agreed with critics that this is a useless project. The project is sound. When the tunnel is opened, the rail system will become truly regional. Rather than commuter only into the city, the trains will be going through the city. They'll enable people from Northeast to work in Media and for Paoli to work in whatever, Chestnut Hill and so on. It'll become a truly region, which it now is, but it's not adequately served with public transportation despite the fact that we have the basic infrastructure.
What kinds of changes would have to take place in the scheduling of trains and in the train routes themselves in order for it to be an effective regional system? You were mentioning before that if you want to go from one place to another and hook up with another bus, for instance, chances are you'll have to wait a half hour in between and it will be a long and frustrating experience. It would be the same way with the trains if the schedule is as they are now and you had to hook up from one line to another.
First of all, we lost a half-hourly service on some of the lines a year or two ago when financial crisis came. Service every half hour is quite acceptable, and we had good ridership during the day when that was the case. If we return that, if we organize the bus feeders and other rail connections and so on, if we explain to people, if we introduce joint fares, and if we cooperate with employers, if we stop subsidizing free parking by everybody, or stores and businesses are today subsidizing parking and carpools and so on, and nobody's subsidizing transit from the private side, it's only what's coming from the public side, I think that the results would be much better than people usually believe.
Let's take a phone call, and our number again is 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling as a recent arrival to Philadelphia from Los Angeles, and Before I ask the question, I was just interested in throwing out the comment that I don't know if native Philadelphians realize just how badly marked the streets are in this town, especially in Center City, and how bad the roadways are. I don't know how much that has to do with maintenance and how much it has to do with weather, but they're certainly a lot better in Los Angeles. The question I had about traffic lights was, you know, you were talking before about how you get stopped, especially in Center City, at every light, and the question I had was, are you aware that how long some of the lights are, particularly, for example, on Broad Street? Do some of those lights last, going parallel on Broad Street about, it must be a minute and a half, and they're extremely long, and the streets, to cross Broad Street, you get about 5 seconds, and it's about at least twice as long as anything I've ever encountered.
Let me briefly comment on your remark about the traffic signs. I fully agree with you. The signs are atrocious, and philosophy has been in the city that once people come in the city, they'll use maps and so on. And this is not a good philosophy, and you are absolutely right that Los Angeles and California and most other cities have much better signing. The condition of streets also could be better, but that's also somewhat national problem. We are not the only ones with poor streets at the moment. With traffic signals, when you have such a major arterial like Broad Street and many local streets crossing it, then somewhat longer so-called cycle time is logical. A minute and a half would be all right, but you will run sometimes here into nearly 3 or 4 minute signals. In those cases, it's usually a police officer regulating, and he has not been instructed that that's very harmful to traffic. We just need better skills of police officers for that purpose.
Well, I don't know. I lived right off Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, which is a major thoroughfare.
Yes,
there
yes.
Street lights on that street that were as long as on Broad Street. That's all I had to say about that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. An increasing number of people, myself included, commute by bicycle. Don't you feel that secure bicycle parking as well as bike commuting in general should be encouraged?
Yes, absolutely so. Bicycles should be encouraged, and they are desirable for many reasons, but they need, there are two things that are needed for bicycles to encourage them, not only their parking, and that's really a smaller problem. One is that they should be protected more. They are vulnerable to traffic and especially inclement weather and so on. They should be given small paths or special signs and so on, protected from other traffic. And second, bicyclists themselves must be required to obey traffic signs. What we have today, bicycles running on sidewalks, on wrong way, on one-way streets and so on, that should never be tolerated, and it would be in the interest of bicyclists to obey the rules, but the police should really enforce the rules. And I cannot blame the bicyclists until the police does something about it. There are laws and so on, they're just ignored.
Thank you for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Zucan, agreeing with you that it is a remarkable turnaround on SEPTA's part, I wonder if you are not unrealistic in expecting SEPTA to do more when its primary source of funds beyond fares is a license to beg. If you agree with me, how can we persuade the legislature to give it some resources?
I do agree with you that one of the basic conditions for making more progress is some permanent financing, and we are in one of very, very few cities in the United States that doesn't have a permanent base for financing but waits year after year how much it'll get from Harrisburg, and now even Washington has fluctuations up and down. One way would be to develop a formula from the state, and another one would be to introduce a regional tax. And I think that that has been discussed, and there are many, unfortunately, rather narrow views from the region that, especially suburban counties, I'm a resident of one of them, that say, why should we pay for the region? We don't get much service and so on. Well, there are two answers to that. First of all, because there is some service in suburbs and it can be improved, and we should improve it in suburbs. And the second one is that there can be proportional allocation so that suburbanites don't pay the same amount as the city, which has more service. And finally, the third reason is that we are in the same region. Considering that one county versus another, or city versus suburbs, it's a very short-sighted view, and it may cost the region very much if it prevails.
Won't it cost the state a great deal if this region becomes uneconomic?
Well, if the region economically suffers and the service goes down and it's unstable and the region has economic problems, certainly, yes, it's a loss for the entire state. Oh, definitely so, yes.
Thanks very much for your phone call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to agree completely with something Dr. Vukic said about the increase in parking fees, and just to maybe point out that there's a real cost involved in having so many vehicles in Center City, which all of the city and all of the people share, and that in raising these parking fees, we're not making an artificial structure at all, but just merely institutionalizing a real cost in the system. And I wanted to ask if Dr. Vukic felt that there would be any point in making the sort of capital investment that would be required to raise the Philadelphia rapid transit systems to the quality of BART or Metro.
Just a moment, I'm not quite clear what's the proposal to increase them to BART or Metro.
In terms of re-engineering the tracks and using computer control and so forth, new cars.
We would need many, many fewer millions than Washington and San Francisco. We are really talking about modernization of track and stations that could be done. We are getting Broad Street cars. We are modernizing stations. I think that is underway. I would say that we should look into extension of the system. For example, 69th Street was the nearly end of the city when it was built, but now the city goes way beyond. The Northeast also. We should never have an end of the rapid transit line where it has to transfer tens of thousands of people. The line should be going on. So I think we should look into extensions of this. Really, modernization is something that's partly going on, and I think it should keep going on, yes.
Would you see any advantage to building the sort of peripheral line in the regional rail system that I saw suggested in the Enquirer recently?
You mean circumferential, going like City Line Avenue or so?
Correct, yeah.
I don't think that would be the most useful one. I would see maybe some light rail or coordinated bus, but I don't think that such a line would be really justified presently. There are many other corridors which would carry many, many more people and be easier to justify financially.
Thanks so very much for calling. We do want to get to some other calls this afternoon. Thank you. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, I first have a comment for the good professor. I'm not the biggest spender downtown, never have been, but I often went to Temple Cinematheque, and I will not go anymore because of the new parking meters on Walnut Street and 16th Street. I could park, for nothing, of course, before, so that the downtown sees me less and less. I very seldom don't go downtown shopping anymore. So it seems to me that... and by the way, a steep parking fee is beyond my ability and desire to pay. So that it seems to me that what the powers that be of the city really want is a business complex and an area for tourists rather than for people like me to whom a steep parking fee isn't worth it. And I refuse to take a bus. I'm near a bus, but I would not take a bus downtown in the evening, to get down and back.
There is one problem that for many decades we have really oriented ourselves to cater everything to the automobile.
I agree.
And you see, in suburbs, when you or I drive to a supermarket and park there, if somebody else walks into that supermarket or comes by bus, he is subsidizing our free parking. We are used to that free parking, and many employers, many companies have free parking, usually for the president and chief controller and so on. And the secretary or some other worker who comes by transit, he doesn't get his 75 cents reimbursed. So we have a deep bias against public transportation. And we will have to get used to pay more for the automobile.
I'm for public transportation, but you see, I'm afraid to use it at night.
I cannot completely deny that. I'm sure there are some bus lines and so on that I would not flatly say, yes, please use it, but for the reason you're quoting. But I would suggest that you try, if you haven't used SEPTA for the last couple of years, give it a try again, because it's quite different than many people
I have believe. Used it. I will not use it at night. And as I say, I live one block from a very convenient daytime line. I will use it during the day, but this is evening entertainment for me. And so, as I said, it probably doesn't make any difference to anybody, but I thought I would comment.
Well, in the very center city, the charges on parking will remain through the evening. But in other areas, charges do not apply in the evening hours.
Thanks so much for your call.
Welcome.
Bye-bye. I have a feeling that a lot of our listeners, particularly women traveling alone at night, would agree with the woman who just called about the lack of security when you're waiting for a train or a trolley or the L, especially in the underground areas where you might be waiting in an area where it's deserted.
Well,
and there's no one there who's officially protecting you in any way, and that's a lot of risk to go through to see a film at night.
Yes, but I would point out that this is a problem that is not a problem only of public transportation. It's the problem of cities in general, or even suburbs, anywhere. It's a problem of our society today. Parking in a parking garage and walking on stairways down and so on is at least as unsafe as walking into a subway station. We have problems in that also, and that's a matter of rehabilitating areas, and we know some areas are certainly scary, and I fully agree with the comments, but some other areas have been rehabilitated, improved, lit at night, and policed, and the attitudes we sometimes had tell people not to go there. We have to reverse that. The fewer people we have, the less is the security. If we manage to get more people on the streets, we'll have greater safety and security.
Let's take one more phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air. Oh, hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. Following up on that security point.
Yeah, and can you make it brief, because we're running out of time?
Sure. I've heard that many gains would be realized if Center City at mass transit was free in terms of air pollution, increased security by vast increase in riders. What's the professor's thinking on that?
The thinking is that there were suggestions about 10 years ago, rather popular, and ex-Governor Schaap was for it and so on, that to make free transit. However, that really is not so good. There are some problems with it, and one is the problem of financing. And even if we had the $100 or $200 million that are today collected through fares, I would say we would achieve better ridership if we would use that to make higher frequency of service, cleaner cars, faster and better traffic. It's not so much the fare that deters people; it's the quality of service.
Just one real quick question on that. I understand that it costs a great deal to collect fares. And in fact, SEPTA would save a great deal if it didn't have to bother with fares.
Yes, but not as much as it was believed. And you can reduce that by introducing more transpasses and so on. We are going there. Now, I am certainly against excessive fares, like on some regional lines where it's $2.50 one way, or even 75 cents should not go much higher. But free transit is not the thing to do.
Thanks for your call. We won't have time for any more phone calls this afternoon. What are some of you've mentioned some of the things that you think we could learn from the transportation systems in other cities. Can you sum up for us some of the things in state-of-the-art transportation that you think we could eventually incorporate into our system?
There has been a great change in opinions about cities and urban transportation in the last 10, 15 years. And when the automobile came into wider use in the 30s and 40s and 50s, it seemed that when a street is congested, the thing we should do is widen it. When the wider street didn't work, then we plowed the whole block and built an eight-lane freeway. And then after some cities plowed freeways every mile or two, they noticed that they're not cities that they wanted to be. The city just stops being, ceases being a city. It becomes an unbelievable collection of freeways and parking areas in between with a few buildings. So that the experience has been, no, instead of widening and widening, let's build some essential arterials and some freeways, but in the very core areas, we should decrease automobile traffic and favor public transportation. Let's change cities into pedestrian areas more. And that doesn't mean we'll ban the auto, as it's sometimes popularly mentioned. By no means. The automobile has a very important role. It stays, but it stays in a somewhat subordinate role in the densest areas. And the pedestrian begins to dominate, and there are more and more areas, streets, malls, parks that are found in many cities. And more of our people, when they go to Europe especially or to Canada and they find these cities, they say, oh, how beautiful it is there.
We only have a few seconds remaining, but what message would you give to SEPTA now in this transitional period, if you could sum that up very quickly for us?
I would like to suggest to SEPTA to keep doing what they have been doing, but they need much more work on informing the public, on thinking about the public needs, on thinking more about the user. And the attitude toward the user should still greatly improve. I think on that one has been somewhat lagging.
When you say continue doing what you're doing, you don't mean cutting back on commuter
no,
service.
No, I mean recovering. They're trying to introduce it and so on.
I want to thank you very much for spending the past hour with us. It's really been interesting. Dr. Vukan Vucic.
That's my pleasure.
Thanks. Dr. Vukan Vucic has been my guest. He's an expert on urban transportation systems. Germany just awarded him a medal for excellence in transportation research. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania and co-authored the Transportation Task Force report from the Philadelphia Past, Present, and Future Project. Thanks also to all our listeners who called in their questions and comments.